Okay. Okay, so the meeting is called back to order at, what time is it?
It's
6:51. Let the record reflect that no action was taken in executive session. Okay. Next thing, I know Gordon and Randy are going to be calling in, but what I'd like to begin with is allowing Catskill Mountain Railroad and the Planning Department the opportunity to make... Hi, Gordon.
Good evening.
Hi, Gordon.
Gordon, we're going to have some public comment for a few minutes first before we get into the committee debate and discussion on the, both the documents and the, and the and our proposal, as well as hopefully when Gordon gets on the phone, he'll talk us through some of his updates, because we got some documents today from Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if...
Okay, I'm here.
Okay. Oh, no, Randy. Randy, we got stuff from Randy. Okay, so, Randy, do you want to take the opportunity to address the committee?
Happy to do that. Do you mind if I just...
Not at all. Just
thank you all very much. And, again, we really appreciate the time that you all put into studying the quarter out of a very busy and hectic schedule that you all have with other legislative matters. I just want to spend just a few minutes just to give our position, so to speak. It's really in our EOI, but I think I'll just go through it very briefly. We focused, of course, as you know, on the east end of the quarter, which is up from Kingston to the Glenford Dyke. And as you know, we operate until about milepost 6.5 right now with Polar Express. We've had really a sort of a three-prong plan of increasing the revenues of the railroad, and it's part of our business plan. First of which has largely been met. The children's events, which we could operate in the shortest pieces of track, we've been able to implement pretty successfully. And Polar Express is probably the longest of the three. We do intend to continue to push it further west. We think the ideal place for the Polar Express ultimately to terminate is at the Madden House at and Stony Hollow.
Where?
But the Madden House is a house that actually was built before the railroad was built, and it's in Stony Hollow. It was on the old UND Plank Road, and
what,
it's really
milepost is that
8.3, just across the crossing there, and we think that would be ultimately our destination for Polar Express, mainly because it has access and to the road, and we can grab Santa and run him back to Westbrook Lane before the train gets back.
Can you show me where that is on the map?
Correct? Yes, yeah. It is.
You saw that on
right
the
there?
First floor.
Yeah.
When we were in the county van.
Yeah, it's an
I want to see it on a map. I see it.
Right.
Thank
here.
You.
It's a very interesting old building, and it was renovated, or a new roof was put on it by an historical group about 10 or 15 years ago. But it's a destination of that would be the next sort of stopping place from where we are today. We have two other plans for the railroad going up the hill. One is to have an interface with the trail, wherever the trailhead is built, especially for the DEP. We had planned to do that at West Hurley, which is just inside the DEP territory. However, if we have to do it just outside the DEP territory at Milepost 10, we can probably do that too. I think Randy had some suggestions about that with a piece of property. And that would be the next essential destination for the railroad beyond the Madden House. Third, of course, we've heard about the Glenford Dyke. We feel that's an appropriate destination for a scenic-type train and or a dinner train, because it is really the first truly scenic area that you have once you leave Kingston. And that was the focus of our business plan. I suspect any other operators that want to bid on it would probably be looking at a similar viewpoint at East End, but that will have to happen once the RFP goes out for services. On the other end of the railroad, we think that the economic value is mostly on the east end of the railroad because of the fact that I would say 80% of our revenues come now from the eastern end of the railroad. The western end of the railroad, which has been the older part of the railroad, is primarily focused on the leaf season in October. And we've always felt that to build the revenue there would be to extend that train to the Shokan Reservoir, which is just beyond the Boyceville Trestle. Before Hurricane Irene, we had run our trains up to the trestle, but we had not been able to cross it. And it's about another mile from there. You have some very scenic views, which is what we thought would be an appropriate destination for the western train. We have felt that the area in between is beyond our immediate capabilities, and how you preserve it for rail, there's a couple different ideas about that. I'm sure through rail banking you've heard more about that. But long term, you obviously need to preserve the corridor, and hopefully you can put rail in at someday. But our focus is really to get 1 mile in on each end of the reservoir. In terms of other items, in terms of our yard down in Kingston, we've been willing to move it to another location, really for the last couple of years. Determining that location has to be worked out with the county. Obviously, some land has to be purchased. It will take some time, but we another operator will need a yard as well. You have to put these cars behind a fence because otherwise, the kids will throw rocks in the windows of the train, things like that. And you need somewhere indoors to actually maintain the equipment. And we've had the position that we don't really care where that is, as long as it's just somewhere we can access on the railroad. As for the CSX connection, really, we don't really need that. But my suspicion is that other operators, if they want to bring their own equipment in, are going to probably insist on having some connection. But that's going to come up in the RFP process. We can pretty much get along without it. We have most of our equipment already in. But I think as you all think about this, that's really going to be in the context of having other bidders bid on the east end of the railroad and not precluding them from doing so. A couple other comments. West of Phoenicia, the railroad never really has any interest in running past there. I'm sure you all, whether it becomes trail or rail, it really doesn't have much impact on us. I don't think you're going to see any other rail operators want to move past Phoenicia anyway. A couple other issues on easements. And as you know, there's quite a few easements, including the DEP easement. Rail banking would preserve those easements if it can be obtained. We've investigated the rail banking issue, and of course, you have your own advice, which you've already heard. But we've heard that from what we hear, you actually have to run freight and become federally regulated again in order for and it has to be done by an operator in order to become under federal jurisdiction again. Then you can file abandonment and file for rail banking. So the process of rail banking, and again, I don't want to intrude in your conversation with your attorney, but the way you do it is very important, and I hope that was your walk through that process of how the county planned to do it. Because the easements really have to be preserved. There are 35 that we could count coming up the hill. And obviously the DEP easement is obviously very important. But again, you all have had legal advice in that. I'm not trying to be a substitute for that. But that basically summarizes our feeling on this. And I think we're very happy if it turns out that another vendor comes in. And we were happy to convert into a nonprofit and support that vendor. The West End, I don't know what's going to happen to the West End, if that's going to be something the county wants to continue to operate or not. And if a vendor is not found in the West End, we'll certainly talk to the county about that as well. But, we are really in many ways a rail preservation organization as much as a railroad. And in some ways, maybe by bringing another vendor in the future, splitting those two roles apart may be something that works well. I mean, we'll just have to see as the RFP process works its way through. But anyway, that's all I really had to say. I just want to make sure you knew our how we feel about things. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Dave?
Yeah, what would you have to do right now in order to get to 8-3, where the problem is?
Well, there's really the major engineering problem getting to 8-3 is that water issue at Stony Hollow. And I was looking at it. It all has to do with this beaver dam. DOT tells us there's a beaver dam that's on some private property, which is causing all this water to back up and then come back over and go down the right-of-way. So, on the other hand, if DOT can't solve the beaver dam problem, I don't think the county will be able to solve it either. And there has to be a way of taking that water somewhere that is not right down the middle of a track or a trail. And on the other hand, there are ways to do it. You can put a big sewer pipe underneath there, you know. You can do several different things. That'll take some excavating, and that would be something we would propose to work with the county on. But we can do it probably a lot cheaper than the county can have it done through a grant. That's really the only real thing. It's really tie replacement. And what you find in tie replacement is a much easier thing than these specific bottlenecks like this thing at 8.2, the cut we just went through, which required a huge amount of work. It was only 300 feet long, but it kept us, that was what we've been working on all summer. So once we feel we can get up to 8.3, I'm not sure we can do it within a year or two. It depends on how much cash flow we generate. We can contract things out cheaper than the county can because we don't have to pay prevailing wages. So we can use surplus cash flow. We did experiment with that a little bit this year. We hired out some far superior equipment to do what we call tamping or removing ties than we had used before, and it goes, you know, 10 times faster. So as we have more surplus cash flow from operations, we can put into better equipment and speed up the process. So whereas if you go through a government grant, it's probably twice as expensive because you got to use prevailing wages, and the rules are much tougher. So that's the advantage we have. I think if we were a nonprofit, I suspect we could do it the same way. I don't think that would make a difference whether we're for profit or nonprofit. But we do have the ability to generate cash flow through these special events and put it back into the right of way, and that is a way to fill in the gaps in the grant process that might occur. So, and one thing that Randy did say is, as we excavate these cuts, make them wider and wider, they're going to have to be excavated, made wider and wider, eventually for the trail. So the more you can widen them, the better. And we did a lot of that in the last cut. So, hopefully we can work cooperatively with the county on in this stretch. We sort of know what the plan is as we work through. We can move earth around in such a way that makes whatever the long-term plan for a trail with rail is easier. But having a blueprint for that, of course, makes it easier for everybody. I assume that it's going to be a while before the trail comes through anyway, because I suspect that just from all the projects going on, it'll probably be 3 or 4 years before the trail makes it up here. So we could do some work in advance of the trail to hopefully make it cheaper to build. But the main thing is we want to get back to a relationship. We're working with the county on this, and it's been tough on everybody in the last 3 or 4 years. It's we've been sort of fighting each other, but we really want to try to figure out a way to work together and maybe build the rail and the trail a lot cheaper than it would be otherwise. So, any other
questions?
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Chris, do you want to come to the table?
And Tracy, you want to focus on the report, right?
You can make whatever presentation you want coming out of the report. I mean, I think as your impressions from the report.
I'll start with the report, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I know you're putting in a lot of hours this week. And have for many weeks. There were a lot of things in the report that we thought were good. Randy, I think you did a thorough job in assessing a lot of the different parts of the corridor, and it, frankly, it was in many ways nice to have someone other than our department or a trails group validating some of the things that we've been saying for a number of years. It was nice to see the recognition that the Ashokan Rail Trail would be a destination trail that would have tremendous value. And I really think if there's one thing that comes out of this whole process is that that piece is really going to be a special trail. And even we, you know, even if we're struggling about what goes on in Kingston, you know, we would really hope that that can move forward in a timely manner. The other thing that was valuable in the report was just it's an honest assessment of what the track looks like west of Phoenicia. There's still, I know when I speak to the public, there was still a misconception that we actually could really connect the rail from Kingston to Bel Air, and that it was, you know, still contiguous, it was still feasible. And I think Randy saw what we saw when we went in there, that we had, you know, we previously thought about 5,000 linear feet missing. We actually did even more detailed mapping and found that's about 7,000 linear feet that's in the middle of the creek. And once you realize that that can't be restored to Bel Air, then you can really legitimately look at the different sections as different pieces, because you don't have the whole anymore, and you start to think, well, what can those pieces be? Another finding that we appreciated and thought was good, Randy, was that from Cornell Street to Kingston Plaza was trail only. That's a really difficult area for us to even think about rail with trail, and we think it actually has a lot of value to Kingston as a linear park. That area, Kingston, is like a park desert. There's, you know, you don't really have a park system within 5 to 10 minutes walk. There's really nowhere for kids to ride bikes, and the connection to allow people to walk to get food at the plaza is really important. You see people using it now, and I think that will be actually one of the most used pieces of this, and we really appreciated Randy talking about that and bringing that to light. You know, the other thing I thought that was important in the report was just to talk about the track condition, and I won't say much about that, but Randy did confirm the stuff that we found through our HDR report and other analyses that, you know, you need almost 95% tie replacement to get to basic minimum rail standards there. I would say if I could offer suggestions for changing or revising the report, I do think there's still a little bit of a, well, more than a little bit, there is a presumption that where rail is feasible, it's preferable. And one of the things that our department thought was most we'd like to see changed is a more head-to-head analysis of the section in Kingston versus the section in Boyceville to Phoenicia. We never really got an answer to the question of what are the things that rail events would need up into Phoenicia to run.
And I'll be able to speak to that later.
Great. And please, Randy and Gordon, I apologize if you've sent additional drafts in and any of this has already been, you know, changed. This is based on drafts I saw, earlier drafts. You know, I appreciate some of the changes that were made to the economic study. I still don't think we're apples to apples on trail and train, but I do appreciate the revisions that were made. I think there are additional revisions. I'd like to see some backup on numbers and multipliers and assumptions so that that economic study is more transparent, that you can actually put it in a spreadsheet and figure out how they got there. One of the things I'm hoping was added, and I knew this was requested, was a cost analysis for the right rail with trail in certain segments. It's really hard to figure out, you know, cost benefit of various segments without knowing those actual engineering costs and then what those assumptions were based on. Were they based on a 4-foot trail or a 10-foot trail? One of the things I would love to have seen differently is a little more thorough treatment of what a trail is. We continue to to have this overwhelming thing, kind of understanding that trail is for pedestrian use. And a lot of the uses, for instance, west of Big Indian to High Mount, would actually be other uses like cross-country skiing, mountain biking, fat biking in the winter, which is becoming a very popular sport. And we've got to think about trails from all of those user perspectives, snowshoeing, running events. So, again, I would like to see a little higher standard used for trail when it's considered here. One of the things I really still don't understand in the report was the inclusion of a discussion of freight or transload, because frankly, there have been advertising for freight for many years without any economic model that could support it. The transload facility, we would love a transload facility in the county, but it would make more sense to put it in the town of Ulster or the town of Saugerties right along the CSX line. I think you have this opportunity to open up parkland with Kingston, which has no connections to our rail trails. And if you have other areas for those transload areas that would be further removed from residential areas like those areas I previously mentioned, I think those would be preferable. I would have liked to seen more on the health impacts. The health impacts, there's a chart and it talks about 2 miles, what 4 miles of trail would do, what 8 miles of trail would do. Well, if we're really evaluating whether rail or trail or rail with trail is the best from Kingston to Boyceville, that's 18 miles. So I would have liked to seen that number used with both the morbidity and the mortality numbers. And they did that for Kingston in that little section, which was great. But I'd like to see a more thorough vetting of that. The one thing I felt was missing in the discussion was also impacts on residential and neighborhood values in Kingston. Midtown right now, there are areas, as all of you know, that are not always the neighborhoods of most that many people desire to be in. And being along an active railroad, a lot of people don't see that as a positive. But they do see, we know that homes along rail trails usually sell for 6 to 7% more, they sell more quickly, and they rent for higher rents. And again, I think that's something that's not in the report, talking about just what a benefit this would be to people who live on some of these streets and neighborhoods within a few minutes walk of this facility. I want to just sum up by saying the way I read Randy's report, we're talking about a section of giving the railroad about 3.25 miles, which would be from Kingston Plaza to 7.28. I will be honest. I think it's going to be very difficult to do rail with trail in some of those sections. But I don't think the compromise is completely unreasonable. Again, I think if we want to get to a place where we're realizing the value of railroad and realizing the value of trail, that Randy's idea for going to 7.28 is, I think, kind of splits it, and I think that's something to consider, particularly if we're moving ahead with other areas like the Ashokan. One other note I'd just like to make is we've got 6 months left on the lease with the current tenant, and I think it's a good idea to put this out to a competitive RFP process, but I'm also concerned that unless there is a decommissioning plan done by CMR very quickly of how they move things that they have stored and on the corridor, unless they move them off, I don't think you're going to have other entities that want to bid on this. If we don't clean up the ties in Phoenicia, it's going to make it harder to bid that section. If we don't get the Cornell Yard cleaned up, it makes it really hard for us to do trail there. And I really think we need to begin to realize the end of that lease term is coming up, and there really needs to be a plan for clearing the current tenant out while we identify whoever that future tenant is. And I was saying it's kind of analogous to if you rent a house and you have to be out by New Year's Day, you don't plan to have a New Year's Eve party. And it's time to stop planning a New Year's Eve party and start to figure out how you're going to get out of the house by New Year's. So I would just commend Randy on doing as thorough a job as he did. I definitely think, Randy, you like railroads and you know a tremendous amount about railroads, and I appreciated the fact that you could even see through that lens to see fit that there were areas that were more appropriate as trail. And, again, I don't think the report's perfect, but I think you did a lot of analysis here that I think is bringing us to a place where we could have a compromise. So thank you for all the time.
Yeah. Does anyone have any questions for Chris?
No. We didn't get pizza while you guys were in the meeting.
Okay. All right, just as a follow-on, I called Al Harper of Rail Events 2 days ago, and we talked. He was really delightful to speak with, really. He positioned himself a lot as a rail preservationist as well, a lot of similar to what Ernie talked about, CMRR. He said began by purchasing these rail lines, and but he sees himself as a preservationist first and foremost. I talked to him about his requirements. I'll try to, sorry with my voice. I took notes. He said that there are certain key elements required to comply with all of their events. He represented them as being somewhat flexible in terms of the requirements for outside of the train. He said the requirements for what's going on inside the train. It's a set script with set number of people and actors and whatnot, but outside the train, he said there's some give. For an example, he told me that with the Polar Express, they like to see at least 3 to 4 miles of track, but they've done it with as little as 1 mile. The example he gave was Spencer, North Carolina, where he said they ride up to the North Pole, they get out, and then they walk back a mile after getting out at the North Pole. Not that that would be ideal in this location because it's cold and snow, but I'm just saying represented that there was flexibility. He said that for the purpose of considering a market, they work with a 3-hour driving distance from the location. So effectively, we talked about the west versus the east end. He didn't see a difference in terms of the market from the west to the east end. He said that, as an example, he told me that in Boston.
But did he know has he ever been there to see it?
I don't think so. I don't think he has. He said that, but he didn't say specifically. I mean, he's a fast talker. He said that in Boston they have 3 what could be seen as competing events, 3 polars in the Boston metro area, but that he doesn't see it as competing because they have an 8 million person market in Boston, and that from their perspective, New York's an even bigger market. Randy had represented to me in email that the other organization, HIT Entertainment, that Randy thought that HIT perceived Ulster as a competitor to Utica in terms of the Thomas, which I didn't speak to HIT Entertainment. And Al thought that was just crazy. He said that the New York market's so big that it can support more. He said that they need a place to put up the North Pole, a field on either side of the train, so you don't have to. So it's not preferable to be on one side, and that the whole train doesn't have to move to look out the other side. And that's that's the elements from the movie. They use backdrops and. They like it to be on both sides of the track. He said, do we have to do that? No, but they do need some North Pole of some sort. They want some kind of facility, a depot that can handle the people. He acknowledged that in Kingston, it's not a permanent facility. And again, he used that as an example that they can work. He said the ideal for them on a standard gauge track is 3 to 350 people on a ride, but they've done as much as 700 people at a time. He felt that currently out of Kingston, based on the sellout, that they have more capacity, that they're just limited by the number of cars that they have right now. Parking, he wants at least 150 spots, but preferably 2 to 250 based on some kind of analogy of 2.5 people per car. They need, he said, for to work for the vendor, for the train, they need to participate in retail sales. That could happen in a tent. In an ideal world, he said, it would be in a facility. He said he's seen it where there are other activities that happen at the exchange where passengers are coming and going, where they have church groups that come in and sing, or where again, where the rail vendor maximizes the event. He says it can be elaborated and customized almost as much as the vendor wants, but on board, they're very strict. He wanted to say that their peanuts event is a lot more flexible, shorter ride, and that there's all kinds of activities, and it's not so set on a story, so it can be highly customized because he said they're working with 50 years of cartoons, you know, by adults. And again, he said that he came up with this idea really to make rail lines viable from his preservationist perspective. So that was my conversation. He said, come out to Durango, because he has the number one train in the nation. That's really how he ended the conversation.
Oh, we could go on.
Very nice.
I think
they
wrote sure.
I went up and it looked pretty
good. Yeah,
right.
Really
great. Okay, so that was the conversation with Al Harper. I did not speak to HIT Entertainment, which is the...
By the way, the railroad did add a car recently.
I know, Arnie told me that they were going to add a car, which is great, because they were sold out before adding a car. Okay, so the committee want to move forward with discussing... Or do you want to open it to the floor for 10 minutes, 15 minutes to the floor? Okay, so we'll open for 15 minutes to the floor for public comment. So that, if everyone could be kind of respectful, I mean, I'm going to be looking at the clock, but just a couple minutes per person to allow for other people to comment. It's pretty apparent that not many people want to comment. I also want to thank everyone for their written comments. They've been circulated to all members of the committee. I also forwarded them to Randy so that he could take into consideration if he chose any of the written comments. But it certainly was helpful for me to have them in written form and to be able to reflect and analyze and go back over the report in light of the comments. So thank you all. Okay, is anyone on any of the audience members like to speak? Any additional?
Yes, could I have a couple minutes?
Absolutely.
I am Bill Ford, and you've probably heard of me or read some of the stuff that I've been writing, but I strictly want to talk about the history, because I still don't see it in this report other than just a brief mention. And Kingston wouldn't be the same as it is. Ulster County wouldn't be the same as it is if it weren't for that history. And I think Kingston is in a very unique spot with the connection we have with the thruway and other avenues to get here. And we're not doing enough to publicize it. I would publicize Kingston as a birthplace of America, which it was, definitely. And in this instance, with the railroad track, the track that they're talking about tearing up now was a replacement track that replaced the original track, but still it goes back to 1913. And it is actually improved when they did replace it. And I don't work for the railroad. I don't listen to anybody. That's maybe my problem. But I'm a historian, and I want you to think deeply before you tear up those tracks, that you are destroying something that you can't get back. And it's happened in Kingston before, you know that, and I want to fight to prevent it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Tim Wiedemann. I work with the Kingston Land Trust on the Kingston Green Line Initiative. And you know, I think we submitted some comments with a bunch of other folks. I'll keep it really brief. But, you know, I think it's just worth considering the work that we're doing in Kingston and the vision that it represents. And it's really exciting. There's a lot of things happening with our trail system in Kingston that this would be a tremendous addition to. And I'm really excited to hear the recommendation for trail only from Cornell Street to the plaza. You know, in response to Mr. Ford's comments, I'll just say that this is something we take very seriously, too. We did take up tracks down in the Rondout, but I think it's for a very important purpose. We have an opportunity to get people onto these corridors to see the places that they've never been able to see because they haven't been able to go there. And we plan to do interpretive signage as a way to tell the story of the railroad. It's an important story that is what makes this trail system possible. So I agree that the history is important. Part of what justifies all this in Kingston and up the hill on the UND is the fact that it's an opportunity to preserve the most important asset, which is not the steel of the rails, but the corridor itself. And if that's preserved, there's always the opportunity for conversion back to rail in the future if we rail bank it appropriately. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Yeah, that was going to be the primary comment that I would have is that I think it was implied in Hunt's comments, actually, that if the corridor is to be preserved, the actions of putting in a trail can preserve the corridor in sections where a railroad can't go in and actually be run. The history that I have with this corridor goes back almost 15 years, and we wanted at that time to get in and work in the corridor west of Phoenicia. And the railroad couldn't find a way, and the Railroad Advisory Committee with legislators on it couldn't find a way to let the trail people go in with no intent to take up rail at that point. In the intervening time, nature has taken out trail, taken out track. Nature has taken out bridges. And to now couch the discussion as though taking out additional track that allows replacement of the sub-basement, putting in new drainage, and restoration of the corridor, to couch that as though it's a negative thing, it doesn't fit for what I see our efforts as being. If you are going to preserve the corridor, that work needs to be done. And at some later point, if the trail isn't being used and there's a reason to put track back in, it can be done. I don't think that this necessarily has to be in the Stone report, and I don't think that my thrust would be to have this committee make the Stone report say everything that needs to be said, because there are 10 years of documents in addition to their report, and the commitment of the members of this committee at the beginning that I understood was to use this report to inform the committee.
Right.
So I would encourage the committee, especially, you know, at this late date, to let the consultant finish up with the suggestions we had and accept their report as essentially a valuable and useful document for where their expertise and strengths are, and with the notes of where they weren't able or weren't asked to go to certain topics, and then to move to a plan that lets the railroad have some clarity, or railroad operators have some clarity about where the county would like to see railroad operations, and let the trail operations that are already queued up move forward and consider later what to do with the places that we don't understand or don't have a clear vision of yet.
Hi, I'm Kevin Smith. I'll try to keep this brief, just of transportation corridors. And the history here is really tremendous value. And I think one of the things that I see lacking in the report, and it's no knock on Randy and Stone, because they
come up with their question.
Number one, this is not...
Oh, can you come up here, Kevin? They're not thinking they're catching you on the recorder.
This recorder
for the...
I know it's not Stone's area of expertise, doing trail planning studies and impact studies on trails per se. I think one of the things really missing here is the large network, and comparing this to some of the other really signature networks and long-distance trails that are being done around this country. I mean, there's 1,900 rail trails or so around the country, and there's some amazing networks that have been built with tremendous economic impacts. And I'm not seeing those comparables represented in this study. So if I had one thing that I would like to see brought into the look of economic impacts, it would have been that. In terms of social and environmental justice, I'd like to point out that this trail corridor connects to really great natural resource areas. The Ashokan Reservoir, 11.5 miles of lands that have been closed for 100 years to our communities. Somebody from Kingston, what is it, 17% of households in Kingston that don't even own cars, could go on this corridor and could make their way up to the reservoir. Right across Route 28 in the town of Kingston is the Bluestone Wild Forest. DEC at Ontario Lake has a day use area there. It's disability accessible. And there is a whole trail network there that kids, schools, families could go to without having to get in a car. I think these are important considerations. And that goes to the last thing, which is health impacts. I think we are only beginning to understand the full health impacts and the epidemic that is going on in our society in terms of the lack of physical activity. Anything that we can do as a county, and this checks off a number of boxes in that respect, that are county policies and county long-term health improvement plans. Those are the things that I think are very important to be considering. And I would just like to close by saying, you know, when in 1979 the county purchased this, and there's still not 1 mile of this that's open to trail. So I'm really happy to continue to work with the county. Thank you all for your work. We'd like to see the county, the trail projects move forward where they can and maintain the potential in the future for connectivity to the whole and hopefully far beyond Kingston throughout the county and to other counties. Thank you.
Up to the mic. I'm Mick Mercurio. I'm just a regular citizen in this county. I've lived here 66 of my 70 years, and I'm one of the only people who's ever skied the full length of the UND corridor in winter, way back in the 70s.
Downhill?
some, yes. I'll hit 2 points and be real brief. You folks have this in black and white. But I want to say to the Stone folks that I think they understated the economic benefits of the trail to the from the local population. In other words, the county resident contribution of economic activity. And I'll read one of my bullet points because I'm not very good at extemporizing. While rail may offer positive impacts on business and tourism beyond profits for the railroad, they appear to be somewhat less than a trail option. Trail users eat, shop, and pay taxes in our communities, and that includes us, the people who live here, purchase food, outdoor equipment like bikes, skis, footwear, and clothing from local businesses. People who exercise regularly, as in walking or cycling on trails, are healthier and have better brain function than those who sit, and children who have places to exercise outdoors do better in school. And the other shortcoming, I think, of the report, you know, criticism, let's say, not shortcoming, that the report hasn't really looked at and quantified the pollution and carbon footprint aspects of trains and of the travel it takes to get to the trains. The legislature has expressed concern over environmental issues like Indian Point, pipelines, power lines, fracking, microbeads, and cell phones, but we haven't really thought about the carbon footprint, one of locomotives that aren't exactly the cleanest things on the planet to run through populated areas, in particular senior citizen housing, where there's a link between diesel fumes and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, and there's a ton of research on it. And the other is that there's an enormous carbon footprint of all those people who are traveling 50, 75, 100, whatever, pick a number, miles, to get to a train attraction. And NASCAR wants to say it's green, but all those people driving to NASCAR races aren't very, all those cars aren't very clean. Well, I'm not comparing the railroad to NASCAR, but you get the comparison.
Thank you.
So those are my 2 points. Beef up the contribution of local economic benefit and look into the carbon and environmental impacts.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have time for one more comment. Does anyone else, would anyone else like to make a comment?
No. I don't want to say much. You have lengthy comments from me on William Sheldon. When I first started looking this, I didn't know anything about it. I'm an economics professor, and I take a look at data and analysis.
And looking at it, I always simplified it down to it's going to be rail, trail, or rail with trail. And I had a conversation a summer and a half ago with a railroad person, and I said that. And I said, look, if it's got to be one or the other, then there's 100,000 local users versus just a few. and it has to be that. I would be delighted with rail with trail. But I just haven't seen how it can be done yet. So I would love to be convinced that it makes sense to have both in the corridor and a way to work it out. But if we have to choose one or the other, I think the data overwhelmingly favors trail. And we would still have the segmented approach that would give us what I think could be a wonderful, vibrant rail operation in the West End, where I think it would be welcomed for economic development. So thank you.
Okay. Last comment. Yes.
Thanks, Tracy. Appreciate it. Sure. Again, I'd like to thank the committee for its time and certainly the consultants for their work. In closing, I'd just like to say that the success of policy depends upon its implementation. And one of the things that you should not forget is the commitment from the trail folks that have been here with you in this discussion since the beginning. You should not forget the amount of money that the county currently holds in its coffers to implement trail. And you should not forget the current success in terms of keeping the line open that the railroad has shown. Looking at this, trying to make decisions, ultimately what you need to think about is, can we implement the policy that we decide? We believe that the trail folks can. And we believe that the county doing trails can implement those trails, and we've lined up capital projects to do them. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so moving on, before we move on to other business, does the committee want pizza or not?
I do.
Sure.
I didn't hear what you said.
Do we want pizza or not?
Oh.
We're going to deliver.
It's something. You need to, we need,
I mean, you're going to be here. Here. It's 28. You're going to be here.
I'm fine. If you guys want pizza, we can all split it and get pizza.
Okay.
I realize this is a little off from business, but
yeah, well, they don't have to eat it if you don't want. Those of us that want it.
Yeah.
I'll
just
pizza. I'd like it to have lots of vegetables.
Tell me how many. Tell me what you want on it.
I'm happy with just a plain one, but whatever. Yeah, I eat just about anything but anchovies.
For me.
Why would you get a plain across?
You're probably going to have to get a... You want to get one plain and one with...
Yeah.
You like mushroom and pepperoni?
With lots of vegetables.
And anchovies on the side.
I think we should make this as simple as possible.
Yeah.
Cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
and how many should we get?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 9 on the committee. Does everybody want two pizza on the committee?
They got at least two large.
So get two pizzas, two large.
Two large.
Yeah, I don't really want two.
Are you going to get, but that's two, that's basically two slices each.
Yeah,
or less. It's actually less.
We might want to share.
Yeah, I've got
one
anyway.
Like what?
What about the rest of the people?
That's what I said. We might want to share.
You guys are
dying. We're going to beer, buddy.
All right, everybody's all right with that. We'll just whatever font we'll split. Okay, so Randy, are you still there? Are you still with us?
Okay.
The safety of the committee. Randy, you still there?
I'll second that.
Okay, good.
That's probably the first thing
I
ever read.
Okay, so Randy, today we forwarded, Randy redid the economic impact analysis, which was forwarded to everyone, and also there's a cost analysis comparison traveling west from Kingston to High Mount.
Are there copies available for...
I'll have to, when phone comes back, I think she has extras.
Because I don't think that went out.
I don't know. It came late. But I'll find out for it. So, Randy, you want to talk us through, let's start with the economic impact analysis.
What would you like to know? I mean, it's pretty self-evident, I think.
Okay.
It breaks down both the capital budget and then the operating budget. shows the multiplier, it shows the non-rail activity, and comes to the bottom line. It's not meant as really an either-or situation. It's just to show you what monies generate by the rail operation. The Des Moines study did the trail impact, so that you have both of them there. And I think that this is not an either-or situation. My feeling is that, and somebody voiced it either, you can get started with the parts of the trail that you've already got funding for. If I read correctly, the Ashokan stretch, there's $3.5 million sitting somewhere.
$4.8 million.
Well, there's more, but yeah.
Okay, but you have that. And I think everybody's in agreement that the Ashokan is a non-rail stretch, despite the fact that the railroad at one point would like to go as far as the dike, but a number of conditions prevent that.
But can we talk about some of the changes?
Get started with.
Gordon, can we talk about... Can we just talk about some of the changes that you made? I have a couple of specific questions. Let me just ask specific questions. You changed the special event licensing fee from $333,550 down to $187,893. You kept the multiplier at 1.9799. At the last meeting, I expressed concern.
If you'd like, pull that out. And just subtract it down from the bottom line. You and I have had a couple of conversations about that. And,
unless someone tells me differently, my understanding of the special event licensing fees is that they go out of county. They go straight out of county. So I especially have a problem with the multiplier, but I'm wondering why you changed it from $333,550 to $187,893.
Because I did the, when I moved all of the numbers from the 2015-16 projected budget to the 14-15 actuals, there was a change in the funding.
So that line was from the actuals in 14-15.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I would still, just as one committee member, I would still suggest if that line goes totally out of county to Colorado or wherever, then I don't think it has a local impact.
Well, it, the one impact that it does have is that they pay taxes in the state of New York on all money generated.
But that's without a multiplier. I mean, you've taken the dollar and the figure and almost times it by two instead of taking a percentage for what they would pay in tax, which would be the maximum.
That would be pulled out, and it would be a multiplier of one.
It would be a 0.08, because the local tax is only 0.08.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And that's
0.08.
Yeah.
But there's no local tax on that. No, he's talking about income tax.
You're talking about income tax, because this would be seen as income.
There's no sales tax on tickets.
Right.
There's no sales tax on tickets, but we're talking about two different things.
They're talking about sales taxes on certain special events, and you're also talking about income.
Right. We're talking about an income tax. I think this number is very fuzzy. I mean, again.
But again, as I said, if you want, feel free to pull that out entirely. That one, if that is a sticking point.
Okay.
Feel free to pull that out entirely.
Manager, which one are you looking at? I'm trying to find it.
Operating expenses for
Right, absolutely. And the same thing with salaries, where there are salaries. I can see that.
Yeah. So it's the same. The best part of the use is to take that out entirely, both from the
I don't think I have that.
Actual expense and then also from the final output.
Okay. And what were the what are the special events production expenses? Is that that might really be a question for Ernie? Is that purchasing
stuff?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Okay, I just got that clarified from Ernie.
It's getting that installed. It's getting the Santa Clauses to and from. It's all of the expenses that are tied into operating that event.
Okay.
The way the attorney does it, he places those expenses against the particular project. And the peanuts is the same way. So
okay.
What you're looking at is all of those general expenses that are expended against the actual events.
Okay.
As opposed to...
Yeah, and Ernie's just told me that that's all local. You know, it's buying backdrops, et cetera. I get that. Okay. Yeah, does anyone else at the committee have any questions on this? On the?
No.
Okay. Because I want to keep the table for that. Let's move to Randy and the cost analysis comparisons. Can you... Are there cost analysis comparisons you can get out for them?
On this, do you really talk first and then have questions? Okay.
Randy, do you mind talking us through this?
Well, this was, this is all that that I had.
Nope.
I think I was kept right enough to give us an order of magnitude rather than some precise numbers. I'll say that right up front.
I didn't hear that.
What I wanted to look at the alternatives here and the way the columns are broken up is I wanted to do it section by section. And the first column is what it would be basically the out-of-pocket costs from volunteer organizations, basically what I call CMRR, which is great, but remember that's limited by how much cash flow they can produce towards this on an annual basis. So if you look down at the totals and you start seeing some big numbers, just remember, they can't afford to fund that out of internal cash flow. So the second column that's over there is in a grant writing world that I kind of exist in railroad, when looking at contractor prices, NYDOT funding, and prevailing wage, that's the kind of numbers you're seeing. And yes, they are about 2-to-1 over what Catskill Mountain costs. The third column is what I would basically call, if you're doing the real trail, the real multi-use trail, 10-foot minimum, that's going to meet New York DOT and federal highway standards. And most of that stuff, just so you know, I used the B&L study a lot on that. It was a little bit difficult going through the end of it on some of their cost estimates, trying to figure out what their per units were. And one of the things that really made me stand out on that, and that I want the committee to be aware of, I can certainly tell Chris is aware of it, is what the barrier fencing costs. And when I first looked at it, I'll be blunt, I didn't believe it. So we went back to the means guide and started placing it out. And if you include having to put all those posts of cement, set them down, it's like, yeah, it really could be $38 a foot. But, Chris, if I'm wrong or you have better B&L numbers, I'll replace them in a minute because when I started adding that up, I went, wow, I can see why you were trying to look for an option to try to lower the grade. Really? And I wanted to do an exercise to see, you know, like, what if you didn't go for a real trail, you bet, like, almost like what for a walking trail or a narrow trail. Did it really save you any money to go to, like, a half-width trail? And the bottom line is, yeah, but not much. Mm-hmm. You've still got an awful lot you have to do to get that trail back. And I think the better bang for the buck is to go with the full-width trail. Mm-hmm. Just saying, you get a lot more utility out of it. You're not saving a tremendous amount of money. The columns over to the far right is where it was applicable, and I was using it as an alternative. I wanted to see what I thought the railway trail alternatives would cost, and that includes some of the rock excavation on the lower end. And, yeah, I'm still kind of playing with those numbers on what those ought to be, but at least there's a line item in there with cubic yards on what we estimated would have to be dug out on the lower end to widen it out. And I did that on what I would call the full-length trail the walking trail. Because one of the lessons of this that I became very aware of course, the difference between New York DOT funding and what a lot of people are doing on rails with trails. So in certain areas, you still really might want to look, if you wanted to do rail with trail, can you afford to do it in-house or local or with county funding on short stretches if you've really got something you can't get by NYDOT that's worth it. So I think that's really kind of the exercise I want you to do there. If you didn't want to do that option, how would it come out? Now, the bottom line on these, I broke them all up by section, and it took a lot to do it that way. I hope it's worth it so you can kind of see. But the bottom line is for anybody that's still saying, well, we really want to do a trail over the whole 38 miles, I joked last week on saying that I was getting a nosebleed of that out, but I didn't know what the altimeter read. How I do? I came up with a figure, if it was a complete full-width trail on having to put back that 7,000 feet, I've got an order of magnitude number of about $41 million. And I don't know. I guess I'm just not used to numbers that big when I'm doing a project. I don't really know if that's a valid number. I'd call it an order of magnitude, at least for comparison purposes. The only other thing that I kind of wanted to point out in that section is for the Shokan Trail section. I used the B&L option of the 10-foot wide trail with the stone chip surface, and I think everyone pretty much has agreed that that's a $4.2 million item. But what's not in that $4.2 million item is what you're going to do with Burma Cove or the Boyce Hill Bridge. And that raises it up substantially, plus the additional engineering. So if you're wondering, how in the world did he get to $8.8 million? From what we thought was 4.2, that's all that bridge work that's in there, okay? And that may or may not be something that's an absolute game stopper for you to begin the trail. I frankly don't feel it is. But you still have to figure out at some point how to get off the west end, across the creek, and get back connected to the world. I tell you, looking at it from my standpoint, if I'm coming in and I've got a bike and I want to do that trail, and where am I going to go? Am I going to go to the east end or the west? I might go to the east end once and I find out about the west end, and I think, oh, Lord, is that going to be a beautiful spot there off 28 and 28A, but you're still going to have the bridge back to do it. So I would certainly encourage the committee, you know, I know the bridge is really expensive, but that's a focus item to look at. I think that concludes my comments on that.
Okay, I have Ken Runk.
My initial question, Randy, because I got to the meeting late, I apologize, everybody, for being late. The section from Washington to Hurley Mountain Road on the, I guess we'll call it from the plaza to Hurley Mountain Road. I'm looking on the single sheet, not the multi-sheet, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why is that?
The plaza to Hurley Mountain Road is a railroad trail with the New York DOT standard, 2.4 million, a little bit more than that. Does that include the bridge over the Esopus coming up from the O&W?
Where the money is.
Okay.
Yeah. And I came up, I'll tell you, I mean, Chris was saying he felt that might be like a $2 million bridge.
It's
the only reason that I felt there might be some reasons even lower that was the experience I found on building that 200-foot bridge up in Burlington, Vermont, where they did it as a suspension bridge for the trail. That might save you the center pier, but that was a valid number that I found that had been done for a bridge that length.
Okay. That's a quick thing.
Okay, yeah.
Randy, we just costed that through the study that we're doing for the Kingston Rail Trail, and we found that that bridge was going to be $2 to $2.5 million alone, and they think it's the higher number, the 2.5, because once you have the bridge, you add contingency, inspection, additional design. Just a data point for you.
And Randy, Randy, what did you, for the bridge alone, what did you did it at 176, is that?
Oh, let's let me page it.
Just so we know what kind of differential we're working with. I think I'm reading it as 176.
Yeah.
In fact, because it was, I mean, that project in Vermont is at least a year and a half old for when they priced it.
There is a cost to it.
Okay.
Carl Beard from National Park Service. I believe that that suspension trail bridge is built.
You're talking about the one in Burlington.
Yes.
Clarify. Or are you talking about the Burlington?
Yeah. Randy, what's the width of the Burlington Bridge?
Pardon?
What's the width of the Burlington Bridge?
I'm not sure. I couldn't put any measurements on it.
Okay. But we know that, so we know in that number there's a potential of...
But my point on that was that it was interesting because we did a suspension design rather than a center pier.
Okay. Do we have other questions on the cost analysis? I know we just got it today, but anyone in the committee have anything else?
I'm amazed how close the numbers are when I ran them out. Like I said, the only thing where I'd almost feel like Chris saved me is to check the price of that barrier rail, because if I've underestimated anything, it's going to come back and really bite everybody. When I look at the amount of barrier that we're pricing out on the Ashokan, that kind of took my breath away. It was like $865,000 worth of barrier rail. And it never really struck me when I was on the track car riding through there. If you look at the slope analysis, you look at the ASHTO standard, yeah, that's right. That's a lot of barrier rail.
Yeah. Okay. I don't disagree with your numbers, Randy. They're maybe a little bit higher than ours, but they're not too far off for the Ashokan, if you include the bridge and the cove.
Yeah.
I have one small question. I was looking at the rail only for the trail only on the Ashokan, and specifically the Butternut Cove culvert. What's the $100,000 difference between the trail and the rail? Is it the difference in the load it has to carry?
Oh, yeah, they had a $100,000 difference in their estimate, whether it was light rail or trail.
Okay.
On the Butternut. Yeah, that's where that came from.
Thanks.
All right. Does anyone else have any specific questions for Randy on the cost analysis? Okay.
I have one.
I got to keep it to the... Okay. So, all right. Hopefully, we got more comments from the public today. We're forwarded to everyone. But I know you probably haven't had a chance to take those into account, but while we still have Randy with us, has anyone, upon reflection, have more questions on the report? Okay. And Randy, you're gonna put together an executive summary, you said?
Yes.
Now I have two of them.
Okay. And when...
You took on the rail banking, which is kind of general, but... I can see by your discussion having here that you're getting there on understanding that.
Yeah.
Not a summary,
generally. In an email, he gave me a general comment, which I can forward. I'm just going to put it in the executive summary, too. Okay, so how did Ken Runk put together, which everyone has in the packet, you can look at it. There's a sample resolution. I know no one saw it before today in any real detail. It's in two parts. Ken, you might want to just talk us through.
It served to me as a starting point for the committee. I didn't want to be presumptuous and come with, you know, a resolution that, you know, let's vote on this now. I submit this. For me, this is what I took away from the report in the resolves. The whereases, I think, are pretty benign, pretty middle of the road. Don't really come from one side or the other. With some history and some of the charge of this committee and what we've said in 275 and moving forward and the resolve.
Carl, it should really be less than what he's saying.
I know what he's going to say.
You do?
But the resolves are sort of my takeaway on what would be the best plan for this committee moving forward. And the operative part for me in the resolve is leaving the section from 7.28 to Basin Road as a possibility of further discussion and further investigation to the border of the DEP land. It leaves open the possibility for the future if the DEP had a change of heart and allowed railway trail along the DEP property that we could someday take that up. It's also that section is identified in the Stone report, I believe, and Randy can correct me if I'm wrong on the intention there. But 7.28 to Basin Road had its largest value in connectivity for either rail or trail. And if there's no rail on the Ashokan portion, then that section would probably be the last section converted because it would only connect the Kingston to 728 section with the Ashokan section. They're not going to, I would imagine, and I'm not to speak for the planning of the trail folks either, but I would imagine that they're going to work on the Ashokan portion, but they're not going to work down from the Ashokan portion. They're probably going to work up to the Ashokan portion from Kingston. So that would be the last portion that would be altered anyway, so leaving it open to possible feasible uses if we're able to find enough funding was an important part of what I thought our recommendation could be. I don't know if anybody has any questions other than that. Everyone's at the table got it in front of them.
Okay. Well, I think now, you know, we've kind of hit the challenge of the real, you know, meat of what the committee has to do, and that's at this table, we need to try to come to some kind of consensus for a recommendation to put in resolution form for the legislature for Tuesday. So we all know we're on a tight deadline.
Yeah.
Starting with a kind of generic template in the whereases, it gives us a great sending off point. And hearing what your current position is, Ken, I think is helpful. I think I'd like to open it to the whole committee and see, and I don't know how we want to approach this, if we want to go section by section and see if the committee has questions, concerns, or obvious consensus on certain sections, and then we come back and tackle where we might differ. Dave, and then Jim.
Well, I think everybody agrees mostly with the trail in the city of Kingston to the short of the plaza.
Well, let's confirm that.
Do you want to vote section by section? That might be a good way to do it. If we go section by section from Kingston, and then we can see where our problem areas are, and that's where we can limit our discussion to instead of talking
idea.
The abstract.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a good idea.
Well, don't go by the resolves, go by the sections.
Yes. Okay.
I have a problem voting on this.
We're not voting on that.
No,
we're not voting right now.
We're talking about it.
Talking about it
is fine.
Okay. Ken did say vote. Ken.
I'm sorry.
You said to vote, and Manna's saying she has a problem with voting. Do you mean in an informal way?
I'm saying informally to decide where we need to
determine where we need to flesh things out.
Where we agree and where there's no
movement. If everybody agrees
on trail only in
the linear park, then there's no reason for us to spend a bunch of time discussing it, is my point.
So let's do it informally. We don't have to take official votes. It's not binding. We'll poll the committee at the table. I got you next, Jim. Don't worry. And
that's probably
and
a better term.
There.
The poll. Where are you at on this?
And it's not binding, but it will focus where we have to work to reach
to
consensus.
Right.
Jim.
Just to echo yourself and Dave and Mr. Weedman.
I didn't hear Mr. Lee.
The city has their own, is working to their plan.
This is a different version.
Okay, and I think just the consensus of the table, I think we can all agree that the city portion of it to the plaza, we would follow their plan. They would like a green park there. I mean, I think we can get past that. I would hold it.
So let's begin polling. Let me start then when we're talking about
up till
milepost,
up to Washington Avenue.
Milepost.
I mean, the plaza.
Yeah,
not including, in other words, it's got to be where, right now, where they have, when they load, you want to go back a little bit, but you can still do both in that area.
What do you,
From underneath the where Interstate 587, right?
Where yeah, are you? You're at the in the plaza.
Yeah, when you go back to the plaza.
I think we should probably just go conceptual. We can pick.
Yeah, let's go conceptual. We're gonna let's just talk conceptual, and then we can deal with it.
All right, let me find.
Let's start. Okay, the first thing actually on the summary table is the CSX connection. Do we want to have a discussion about CSX connection?
The connection. Are we working from here?
Well, I'm using the general, the summary one.
Just the one pager. Okay. I mean, right now in the present state,
well,
it has no value. In its present state, there's no value. I mean, it doesn't work. Right. It needs rehabilitation.
And you're talking $300,000.
There's no switch, yeah.
But is it just going to stay the way it is, or is it going to be removed?
I mean, the downside of not having a switch, of course, is it kind of limits what you can bring in.
Right.
But on the other hand, they also pointed out that in today's world, you're not necessarily need the switch.
Well, and also, Randy, in the report, Randy also pointed out that CSX, and Randy, correct me if I'm paraphrasing wrong, that CSX is very difficult to work with, and he couldn't point to a place where you would be allowed to bring things in for anything other than freight.
And that switch is sole source.
Right.
They have the power to put it in, take it out.
Yeah.
So we don't need to make a recommendation about CSX or deal with it correctly right now.
For what, though?
Okay. So moving on.
Great.
Yes, Randy.
On that, be one of the few issues that might counterproductive on to you in the operator selection process. If you don't have to call that one in the air, you can see if any proposals back from your operator.
Yeah, except, I mean, it precedes the next section where we're talking about making it a green park, so
right.
A linear park, so it's like...
So we just leave that one the way it is, status quo.
Yeah.
No switch.
Okay.
So can we...
But again,
talk
this
about Cornell Street up to Washington.
We're first talking about Kingston to the plaza.
Yeah, I mean to the plaza.
Okay.
That's what I meant.
Any comments on Kingston to the plaza, or we have an understanding that we're going to, that the approach is with the linear park?
From Cornell Street to the plaza?
No.
From where to where is the linear park?
Well, Kingston to Plaza is
just before the plaza.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. From Cornell Street to just before the plaza. Yeah.
Linear park for it.
And the train yard, that includes the train yard.
Cornell Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can't keep going that.
We're talking conceptually. We can go back. Right. We can revisit if a discussion comes up later that causes us to reopen, we can go back. But let's just...
All right,
try to see where we have consensus.
And that's what you're doing. Cordell Street out to Albany Avenue, right? So
yeah. And okay, yeah, so...
That's different.
What?
Oh, I'm using this one. All right, let me get
it
over
here. You can grab that.
But this one is a little more specific, though.
Yeah.
It breaks it down a little more.
It does.
Yeah, but
which
it goes
one?
To
I don't know.
But it goes to all different things, yeah.
That's
the one I'm
using. Other people are using something else. But
I don't know.
I'm using the summary one.
This question, is Randy still on?
Yes.
Randy, the Albany Avenue would be from the, I guess, would you imagine it's the west side of the Albany Avenue underpass?
Well, I mean, at least right there at that underpass, you don't have any conflicts with.
Okay.
So... And the right-of-way swings out to the far north side coming underneath that curve coming under there. So, I mean, you can pick your own spot where you think it works, but that's where the right-of-way widens out to the full 66 feet again, and the track swings over to the north edge, which at least gives you room on the right-of-way.
I think he's mixing up Albany Avenue and 587.
Okay,
587
is
the one that's closest to the plaza.
Yeah.
Albany Avenue is the view.
Yeah.
Instead of Albany Avenue.
It should be 587.
Okay.
instead of
so that's not which
enough.
Is that milepost 3.1 to 3.5?
Like you go down, you go under 3.58
is 5.86.
That's why.
But I mean, we would like
that's correct.
To run it. I mean, out to Westbrook Lane, if possible. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we make that correction. Change Albany Ave to 587 on the.
Yeah.
On
which
the
one are we changing? Which detail?
3.58 is 587, not Albany Ave. Right.
Okay.
The miles are correct. The language, the words yeah. had to be changed.
We're not locking anything in right now. We're talking in generals right. just to get a sense of where we have consensus or not.
Right. Now it's 587 underneath that. And now, after it goes under the, what I refer to as the underpass, which is 587, then it widens out. Is that correct?
Randy? It's still 60 feet, but the track moves over to the north side. It's not in the center anymore.
Okay, so there's room for both in that case.
And basically, as soon as you come out straight on that curve, after you come underneath the 587 underpass, then the track's on the north side of the right-of-way there.
Okay.
Okay, I Lynn, you had your hand raised, and then Manna.
I'm lost where we're at.
Okay, Manna?
I'm using this.
I'll get us back in a second. We're going to talk in much broader strokes in a minute.
Can we just use one sheet so that we're all working off the same song sheet? That would.
I actually think, you know what, I think we need to speak in bigger strokes than talking about mile by mile at this point. We've talked about, we can think in terms of sections.
Right, but in order to think in sections, you want to make sure, because sometimes maybe one section you may not, you may want to add it to the back
this
section.
This has the miles, so it might be.
This would actually.
Yeah, I think we should all use the same one.
Whichever one, but let's use one.
All right, so you want to switch to this one.
Only because it has the miles.
I think you're right about generalizing.
Yeah, I want to generalize.
And I think from Cornell Street to the plaza should be just one discussion. We don't need to talk about the.
We can figure out
the bridge underneath Albany Avenue.
We already passed that discussion.
Well, the problem is
hold on, one person at a time. One person at a time.
Right.
Carl, I have Carl talking. Carl,
right, go ahead, Carl.
Oh, I'm just saying that I think that you're correct that we should
go. Can we have one conversation?
In larger sections. So we all kind of agree, the consultants agree, from Cornell Street to the Kingston Plaza, a green linear park walking trail.
No, that's not quite.
To prior to the Kingston Plaza.
Well, where?
Right, just prior to the
part
plaza.
Is that, in other words, it's actually you go to Westbrook Lane. That means you're shifting them over to where you're taking away where they're loading right now.
No,
in fact, they could actually move back for a little bit and load back there, and you can still have a trail and still be part of the park. And it'd actually be a nice little connection for people, you know, coming walking up through there. That's what I mean. 587
now isn't that
the underpass? Yeah, where
when you go over.
But yeah.
Current Chandler.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to get Lynn.
No, that's Albany.
Okay, I have Manna. The pizza's here.
Yeah. I have to say that I think the more specific we are, actually, the better, because otherwise we're going to redo. People are going to have different impressions, and that's why, you know, keeping the summary sheet nearby, I'd like to use the miles. And I just have a quick question for Randy. Since you said Albany Avenue, but you said 3.5, I just want to be sure you actually really did mean 587, and it wouldn't change the cost.
3.58, I think, is Albany Avenue.
It's 587.
3.58 is 587.
587 is the route.
Okay. Yeah.
But 3.58, in other words, that doesn't change if we change Albany Avenue to 587.
No.
It doesn't change the cost.
If anything, that's how I was reading the Google Earth mapping, not deliberately trying to mess you guys up.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Can I, just because then I feel like if we're going to go through mile by mile, can I just put out my sort of broader picture concern as we just so everyone has it, but since Ken put his proposal on the table. This isn't a proposal, but something and it's even exasperated by Randy today getting the financials. So something that I've been thinking about in relation to the, excuse me, I'm going to have to pause a moment with my voice, with the report, mm-hmm. what I would have liked to have seen if we were going to go with a segmented approach rather than something being all rail or all trail or all rail with trail, which never seemed likely. I find it for myself very critical to be able to analyze the east versus the west end as potential rail operations, which is basically what Randy and Stone is proposing in the report. They're proposing an east and a west end operation.
Not versus.
But for me, I want to understand it versus, because I'm not convinced that having both ends of the corridor supporting a rail operation are the highest and best use. The section of the report that spoke to moving funds to the west end against the costly expansion in the east end resonates with me. I'm not certain, even after talking to rail events, that there would be a tremendous loss in the numbers in terms of the 30-50% estimated in the report if those sanctioned events, if the events move to the West End. I don't know if the West End is doable against the East End, but I'm not convinced that having both from the outset is the right thing. I don't know if it's right as an interim, and I don't know if I'm the only one who's thinking this way. If I'm the only one at the table who's thinking this way, then, and I'm putting it out there so I can get a conversation going. Jim?
I fully, I understand where you're going, and they could run, as I said the other night, the current, and also on the West End, run a rail use, which they are running. They could just do the scheduling different and try to attract two different markets. But here, what you can't ignore is the urban center. You have the businesses. You walk up a hill, you're in the Stockade District. You do not have that on the West End.
Right.
So to not to make this the anchor, you're not going to, they would have to do a lot more marketing on the West End. But yes, could they create a business? Sure they could.
Yeah. Okay, let me go to Ken and then Herb. No.
I mean, and you and I had spoken previously about this. I don't necessarily see this as one side cannibalizing the other side of, let's just do west-east side. I also don't necessarily think that we need to bid this as one operator for the whole corridor where there's rail, west and east side. You could bid them separately and see if you get separate companies to bid on them. There's also a significant difference in the two sections. The Kingston section would be what I would imagine for events, for children, put a child on a train. I think this is the exact quote from you. The child on the train is just enjoying being on the train and having the train move, and whatever, I don't want to call them gimmicks because it's not the right word, but whatever gimmicks are involved, whether it's Thomas or Chuggington or the Polar Express or Santa or Peanuts or anything of that nature. And the section, there are some nice sections of this, but for the most part it's tree tunnel and it's crossing a couple of roads. So the east end to me would be the 7 mile round trip or 6.5 miles, whatever it comes out to, for these children's events. And then the west end, from Boyceville to Phoenicia, when fully recovered, is going to be for your excursion trains, for your fall foliage trains, for sightseeing trains and things of that nature. So you're not even having two rides that are the same. You're actually inviting two separate markets.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that's what exists today, and the reality is even if you look at the, if you're consolidating everything in one section and building up one section, you have a better opportunity of expanding your business model versus being segmented I mean, we talked about when we put in 275 from the get-go is the corridor between the plaza and the folks along the corridor, the width of the corridor, the challenges of trying to do both. I mean, I don't think those things have changed, and I haven't seen any of the numbers here that are compelling enough to say, I understand we're trying to compromise, but is it the best use for that piece of the corridor? Or is the best use ensuring your connections and really focusing on building up the Boyceville to Phoenicia end, where there's the room, where there's the space, where you can, you know, there are opportunities there, there are businesses there, and we're talking about driving economic value in a part of our county that could use help. So I'm not sure from an economic, perspective that, you know, we have, you know, Kingston's an established business, and it's tight and it's congested, it's in an urban environment, we're trying to make all the connections with all the trails. Once you start to do this, I think we're going to be hard-pressed on the rail with trail and doing it in a way where we can make sure we make all those connections.
I want to kind of address something that Nick said and this discussion, and that is, in addition to Kingston being an urban area, it has a bus line. And so I absolutely think that Kingston is critical for rail and trail moving forward. And I think that the Kingston up to as far as we can get it, I mean, it's pretty clear right now that at least for the foreseeable future, and I hate having these words come out of my mouth, but a Chopin is probably just going to be trail. But to do anything less than rail with trail on either end, as has been suggested, I think is going to compromise the economic development. And what I wanted to say to something that Nick said, and I really am still an environmentalist. I know there are a couple people in this room that wonder.
Not anybody on this committee.
Not us. No.
But if we're going to promote tourism in Ulster County, or I like to think of it as ecotourism, it's going to draw people, and people are going to be using fossil fuel, whether it's for rail or trail. Drawing people into the county is going to be burning fossil fuel until they switch over to solar-powered electric cars. And I am concerned about the diesel fumes, but I think we really should, you know, maybe ask Amanda to meet with the railroad folks and find out what the real carbon footprint is, because it's a dirty fuel, but it's not a whole lot of usage. And perhaps in the future we can think about how to maintain a historic railroad and do it in a cleaner way. And I think that is something worth exploring. So I don't want to take any more time, but I do hope that if we're working toward a compromise, and I know that Lynn and I that guy over there, this one,
Ken.
Whatever his name is.
Yes, that one. When we envisioned this committee, the hope was to be able to find a compromise that was really viable and maximized the good to the county. I'm actually surprised that we're having a conversation moving in that direction, and very happy about that. So as hard as it is for me to acknowledge, because I think a railroad along the Ashokan reservoir would be beautiful, but if there's some way that the railroad can get very close to it or to a view of it on either side, I think that may be the best we can do at this point, and rail banks so that perhaps if in the future it makes sense, we could revisit that a decade from now, mm-hmm. when only a few of us will still be on the legislature. I won't.
I'll be long gone.